Greetings, brethren. Haksamea. Happy feast. Everybody having a good time? Wow. I'll tell you something. You know, Jerry was mentioning yesterday about getting excited for the feast, you know. And I mean, to this day, this 68-year-old guy still looks, wow, the last week before the feast, I'm going like, hey, Marita, we're going to the feast. I know, Matt, I know. I'm the one who's doing all the preparing. She actually doesn't say that. She just does it. And every once in a while, I'll say, thank you. If you weren't thankful, I wouldn't be doing it, believe me. Oh, greetings, Jesus Christ, brethren. Indeed. The most important words you will ever hear, that is the title to this message, had to do with, this message is on forgiveness. Forgiveness. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God, so we all need to be forgiven. Now, I have a little story for you this morning about forgiveness and truth and honor. This story is about a Chinese schoolmaster back in about 1905 who had a one-room schoolhouse on the Yangtze River. And all of his students were little boys. And one morning, the Chinese schoolmaster walks into the building, sopping wet. And he walks in. Who push outhouse into Yangtze River? I ask again, who push outhouse into Yangtze River? Total silence. So the old schoolmaster goes like this. He goes, and he turns his back to the boys and looks at the blackboard for about a full minute. And then when he turns back around, I'm going to tell you a story. This story about a George Washington. Now, George Washington, first president, United States America. Okay. George Washington, always, honorable man. Well, when George Washington, just a little boy, one day, he go out of his father's home, and he take his father's axe, and he chop down a cherry tree. Chop down a cherry tree. Well, George Washington's father, later, he come home on his horse, and he look, he go, who chopped down the cherry tree? Huh? Well, George Washington, little boy, he go, father, I, your honorable son, George Washington, I always tell you a truth. I chop down cherry tree. You chop down my cherry tree? Yes, honorable father. Are you honorable son? I never tell you a lie. I always tell truth. I chop down cherry tree. My son George Washington chopped down my cherry tree. But on the other hand, honorable son tell truth. Good boy for telling truth. George Washington, I no spank you with a stick because you are honorable son who told me truth. You told me truth. Good boy, George Washington. Now you see, I ask again, who pushed outhouse into Yankee Ibum? Little boy at the back of the room, he goes. And boy, he runs across the room and he grabs a stick out of the corner and he runs back there and he starts beating that little boy. But George Washington, he no get spanky when he chopped down his chili tea. Well, no. But George Washington's father was not in the chili tea. Sometimes you're forgiven without punishment, and sometimes you're not. Brethren, learn this from God. Mark 25, 26 of chapter 11. And when you stand praying, forgive. And if you have aught against any, that your Father also, which is in heaven, forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father in heaven forgive your trespasses. We must forgive. We humans have no choice. God says, you will forgive if you want to be in my kingdom, or you won't be in my kingdom. It's as simple as that. It's not difficult to understand that concept. Now receive to yourselves this blessing of God, which comes from Bible study. If you read Mark 11:26, and I'll read it again, and when you stand praying, forgive, if you have aught against any, that your Father also, which is in heaven, forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father forgive you, which is in heaven, forgive your trespasses. Now, Jesus Christ explained this to the disciples in John 5:22. For the Father judges no man, but has committed all judgment unto the Son. Now, Satan, the devil, who loves to accuse the brethren, might have a naysayer remark, ha, that is a contradiction. Here it says above that the Father won't forgive you. And here it says the Father's given all judgment unto Jesus Christ. Now, the benefit of Bible study, of course, will also bring you to John 5:30, which explains the whole picture, and that is this. Jesus Christ says to the disciples, I can of mine own will do nothing. As I hear, I judge. And my judgment is just, because I seek not my own will, but the will of the Father which sent me. So in other words, Jesus Christ judges human beings exactly the way that he knows that his Father would judge you, because he lived and died for us, and he went through the scourgings. Two scourgings. He went through being spit on, the crown of thorns, and the spear finally finishing him off. He went through that, and the Father says, you, can now. Judge man. As I was studying this message of forgiveness, I thought of Zechariah 14:1. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, and your spoils shall be divided in the midst of you. And it shall be in that day that living water shall go forth from Jerusalem. So now water, the living water now is going to come from, like you always wonder where the source of water comes from. We normally think of water coming from the mountains coming down. Okay, well, of course, the holy mountain will be where Jesus Christ is. And the living water shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea and half toward the hinder sea. In summer and in winter shall it be. Verse 9. And the Lord shall be king over all of the earth. In that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Only those people God forgives shall live and then be allowed to attend the Feast of Tabernacles. So I kind of think of it as the Feast of Forgiveness, that he has forgiven us a great deal, and we are here. And he has opened our eyes and said, now you know you lived wrong. Now I want you to live right. My Father's called you through Jesus, through Jesus Christ. This message is gone, and you've received it, and that's why you're here. People say every year, why are we here? Because it says in this book, go to the Feast of Tabernacles. So here we are. Yesterday we were having lunch, and I was telling a little waitress at a wonderful little restaurant in town that we were staying at Palisade, and we need to go out and get a bite, so we stopped by her place. And I said, our church brethren eat all over town. And she said, which church is it? And I said, the Christian Church of God. And, of course, interesting, she wanted to know everything about the Christian Church of God. So in 30 minutes, I told her everything about this. No, but it was amazing, though, because she just kept asking me one question after another. And I made a comment about the Seventh-day Adventists and how Leviticus 23 starts off with the Sabbath day and then goes through all the holy days right in a row and says, this is what we are to do. And I said, I have friends that are Seventh-day Adventists. I know many of them, wonderful people. But for some reason, they know what the days mean, but they don't keep them. And I said, and I have no idea why. And she said, well, that is odd. And then I mentioned to her that, I said, did you ever think about the 3 days and three nights? How are you going to get 3 days and three nights between Friday sunset and Sunday morning? Yeah, I have wondered about that. I said, well, you see, we're now here at the Feast of Tabernacles. And the Feast of Tabernacles, it starts Wednesday at sunset, the moon, we go by the moon. I said, there's no politics with the moon. She burst out laughing and said, ha, that's right. With the moon, it's always there, isn't it? I said, yeah. And so we go by the moon. That's what God said to do, go by the moon cycles. And I said, so, you see, the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles is a holy day. And the Jews said, we've got to get his body off that stake because the Sabbath is coming. And I said, well, think about it. The Sabbath is coming. The Feast of Tabernacles. The first day is a high holy day. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. 3 days, three nights. And she said, I see that. That makes sense. There you go. She, to her, like, oh, okay, I see that. It's simple. And I said, but you know what? Don't bother going out and telling your friends all about it because, I said, if God doesn't open your eyes, you can't see it. So now she wants to get a hold of Mr. Del Ledger because she insisted upon getting the name of the church, where it was, Christian Church of God in Grand Junction, Colorado. The pastor is Del Ledger. Okay, you have a computer? Nope, but my son does. And I said, well, Marita, my wife said, well, you can have him look it up on there and get in contact with the minister and have a talk with him. So we might be getting somebody new right here in Grand Junction. Brethren, God the Father's message delivered to you through Jesus Christ, His perfect Son, is that you have a great joy to which to look forward. I don't know if you ever think about this or not, but wow, do we have a joy to look forward to. That joy is going to be given to you. And this joy happens when your physical body, which is dependent upon nourishment and oxygen, is changed into a spirit body, which can be with God where He is. Where He is. Human bodies deteriorate with age. Look at me. This is not what you want. Believe this truth. For the true Christian, there is no need for fear of physical death. None. Every night when you go to sleep, you may as well be dead. You may as well. You're not conscious. You don't know what's going on. And then you wake up in the morning and go, wow, where am I? Oh, that's right. We're at the feast. I'm in a different room. Wow. You know, like, ah. Well, when the day comes that you take your last breath and your spirit goes back to God from whence it came, you're not going to know it. You're going to be asleep. 1 Corinthians 15:52, which Jerry made mention of this yesterday. In the moment of a twinkling of an eye at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal, our skin, must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall I put on incorruption, and this mortal shall I put on immortality. Think about that word, immortality. We're talking about forever, forever. Then shall be brought to pass the saying which is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Death, where is your sting? O grave, where is your victory? There is no victory for death and for the grave. Forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. Brethren, Satan, the devil, is the father of lies. He said to Eve, you will not surely die. Indeed, Adam and Eve did die, of course, just like God said they would. You know, I've always had something that, there's nothing funny about Adolf Hitler in World War II, except that I do always get a grin on my face when I think about that little demented Austrian coming into Germany and telling them, the answer to our problem is we must get rid of the Jews. They brought all the money. Take it away from them. We're all going to be really happy. Everything's going to be great. Of course, he had a demon. And one of the things that he taught his SS and his close confidants is this. The bigger the lie, the more apt the people are to believe it. And they did. And the other one he said is, if you tell a lie often enough, the people will eventually believe it. And the German people, they believed in Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was no taller than I am, a little sawed-off shrimp boat Austrian. And those big German soldiers, you know, my Führer. Duh. Matthew 10:16. Behold, very important. Now listen up. Behold, I send you, the disciples. We are his disciples. Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Those people out there will eat you up if they can. You bet they will. But you are to be as wise as a serpent. So they can't. Therefore, be wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. How in the world did they ever come up with the idea out of this book to have the Crusades? You know, there's all kinds of people over there who don't believe in Jesus. I think we ought to go there and beat the bejesus out of them until they do believe in Jesus. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's get a bunch of swords and go make them into Christians. Wait a minute. What was that again? Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be you therefore as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. Okay, well, you carry the sword. I'll be the one harmless as doves. Okay. Remember the disciples sleeping in the Garden of Gethsemane? You remember that? Jesus asked them if they couldn't stay awake just an hour, just 1 hour. They couldn't. They were exhausted. They were just mentally exhausted. They went to sleep. And the next thing they know, they hear all this noise and they see these torches and these men carrying these swords. And there they were. And they all left Jesus. They all left him. They tried to stay with him, but they couldn't do it. He was forsaken. Remember the 10 virgins? How many of us here, think about yourself. Are you spiritually a virgin in that you never will have anything to do with any other belief except what you get out of this book? Okay? 10 virgins, yes, 10. But only 5 brought oil. I can imagine a guy like Gary over here, Rockhound over here, you know, and he's got a bunch of friends in the church, and he says, "Now don't forget to bring a lamp, you know, bring a lantern. Everybody's got to have a lantern." Well, you can just about be sure that out of the 5 that didn't bring a lantern, I'd be the one who said, "I got my lantern right here, Gary. Well, light it up. Light it up. You got any kerosene? What'd you bring? You brought an empty lamp? Yep. Well, I think maybe you better stay in camp. It's going to be kind of dark out there. You know, you brought a lamp, but you didn't have oil. I mean, think about it. Are we being lights and examples unto the world? I mean, that's our job. And I know that it says don't cast, you know, pearls before swine. But like that girl at the restaurant, she specifically asked me. And I specifically answered her. And she says, "I'm going to call him up." And she wrote down my name, wrote down my wife's name. And no, I didn't give her our phone number. But I said, "We are from Portland, you know." But she wrote down, "Christian Church of God, you know, Grand Junction, Colorado, Dale Ledger, pastor." And so she's going to look that up, she said. Okay, so if she does, she does. But you try to be one of the 10 virgins that has oil in your lamp. Don't just have a lamp. Have oil in your lamp. Now, I'm going to tell you an interesting story. And I don't remember in all the time that we've been coming to services since about 1970. I was baptized in 71. And I don't remember a minister ever bringing up this interesting thing that happened in the Old Testament. But I'm going to bring it up because there's an interesting thing in this story about forgiveness. It's in 1 Kings 13:3. If you want to write that down, you can read it later. A prophet from God was told to deliver a message from God to King Jeroboam, with whom God was thoroughly disgusted. And this prophet was to return home without eating bread or drinking water, and to return home by a different route than the one he took down to see King Jeroboam. Well, after receiving the message from the prophet that God was going to take away his kingdom, King Jeroboam exploded and commanded his troops to lay hold on him. Well, at this moment, God crippled the king's hand immediately, and Jeroboam, like most of those so-called kings, turned into a sniveling weakling and cried to the prophet, "Please ask God to restore my hand." And so the prophet did. He prayed to God to restore King Jeroboam's hand, and God immediately restored his hand. Well, now, having been humbled by this prophet of God, he immediately changed in his countenance, and he invited the prophet to eat at his table with him. The prophet replied that even if the king was to give him half his household, he wouldn't even think about eating with him because God had given him the commandment. Go down, deliver the message to King Jeroboam, do not eat bread, do not drink water, and return home by a different route. So he bid the king adieu and he mounted his animal to leave and started home by a different route. Now there was an old prophet in Bethel where this had taken place. This old prophet's sons were there in the room and watched this whole scenario, saw this whole thing happen. So they rushed home and they told the old prophet of Bethel what happened over at King Jeroboam's place. Well, he immediately jumped on his animal, and he took off. He said, "Well, which way did he go?" Well, he said he was going back by a different route, but he started up that way. So he took off after him. And by gum, he caught up with him. And he says, "I'm the prophet of Bethel." He goes, "Oh, hello." And he says, "My sons and I would like you to come and eat in our home." And he said, so again, he repeated what God had told him. The old prophet of Bethel lied to him and said, "God said it's permissible for you to come and eat with me, the prophet of Bethel." Oh, well, in that case, and he turned around and he went back with the prophet of Bethel to his home, walked in. They set up the meal, and he's eating with the prophet of Bethel and his sons. And all of a sudden, the prophet of Bethel jumped up, and he looked at him and he said, "God just gave me the message that you will never return home. The prophet got up from the table, got on his animal, started back. A lion came out and killed the prophet. And the prophet did not, the lion walked a few yards away from the body and just stood there. Just stood there like a statue. A little while later, the prophet of Bethel had followed after him. He saw him dead. He saw the lion, and he walked up to the body and picked it up and put it on the animal, and he walked it back home to his place. He told his sons to dig a grave They put the prophet's body in there. And he told his sons, when I die, you put my bones over his bones. And they did so. And that is all God says. That's all he says. Brethren, who was the prophet of God to listen to? Brethren, who are you and I to listen to? But remember, brethren, you and I have to forgive. God does not have a requirement to forgive. The false prophet is going to be thrown into the lake of fire, which is the second death. That man was told by God, go down, deliver the message, and you come back a different route, and don't you eat, and don't you drink until you get back. Most of us men in this room, we would say, well, yeah, but I mean, if I was there, I would say to God, you know, kind of like Noah did. Noah pleaded for the people, and, you know, and Moses pleaded for the people, and we'd say, well, yeah, but I think the prophet of Bethel should be the one eaten by the lion because he lied to the prophet and he told him it was okay that you told him it was okay. God doesn't listen to human reasoning. God already knows what you think. God knows what everybody thinks. The eyes of the eternal are in every place, and I can assure you his ears are in every place. He knows what you're thinking. He knows your heart. And he knows what he told this man to do. And he didn't do it. Now, my wife and I raised our son Matthew in the former Worldwide Church of God. And more than once, he heard the minister decades ago read the warning of God for mankind, not to lay with mankind as with womankind, nor to commit other sexual abominations as stated specifically by God in Leviticus 18, 22 through 30. The dictionary tells us the word mutation means, number one, a random change in a gene or chromosome resulting in a new trait or characteristic that can be inherited. Mutation can be a source of beneficial genetic variation, or it can be neutral or harmful in its effect. My son Matthew fought with his mutated sexual nature for many years, and finally he decided that he was going to stop fighting against his natural inclination and follow Satan's temptation to just do it, as the old TV commercial urges us all to do. Just do it. He decided he was going to live life his way, and he did. Well, the sands of time passed through God's hourglass, and finally one day there I was talking with my son as he lay in a hospital bed, and he made this statement to me, you know, Dad, I never believed I'd get AIDS. Eventually, he died of AIDS just short of 33 years old. Now, lyrics to a very popular song read, it can't be wrong when it feels so right. You will not surely die. Yeah, Satan the devil. Always do opposite what this says to do. You can always come up with a reason to do the opposite of what the... Yeah, but in this case. Well, it all depends upon whom you wish to please. Now, brethren, as you'll recall, I said that the title of this was, what is the title? The most important words you will ever hear. And these are, I can assure you, these are the most important words that you will ever hear. In Matthew 25, 31 through 34, we read, "When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit on the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations. And he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, and he shall set the goats on the left." Now, brethren, listen very closely. These are the most important words you will ever hear. Matthew 25, 34. "Then shall the king say to them on his right, where you and I have every intention of sitting, come you, blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." Forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. Brethren, forgive so that you will hear Jesus Christ say those words to you. Have a wonderful feast, and may God the Father in heaven above bless you all through our Son Jesus Christ. Amen.